brain back down on the desk. Elena, the 14-year-old, came downstairs first. She was a pretty girl with shiny black hair and lively dark eyes. She seemed confident and mature for her age. She spoke in full sentences, not in teenage grunts and fits and starts. She didn't seem at all hesitant to answer Pinto's questions, but she had nothing to tell them. She had been in her room since getting home late from school, texting her friends and listening to music. She had glimpsed her father talking to a man in a suit but didn't hear what they were talking about and didn't see or hear the man leave. Iris Sutter, the 12-year-old, slunk down on the couch and pressed close to his aunt. He gripped the couch arm tightly with a slender hand. Before Pinto could ask a question, Ira demanded in a tiny voice, "Is Dad in trouble?"
"No, of course not," Roz answered for them.
"Then why is he so upset? Why are all these policemen here?"
"There was an accident in your driveway," Pinto spoke up before the sister could answer. "We're just trying to find out what happened. No one in your family is in trouble, I swear."
"Ira, did you see that dark car in your driveway?" Pavano asked.
The boy had a slender, pale face. His natural expression appeared to be worry.
"I saw it after the police came."
"But not before?"
He shook his head, then glanced at his aunt. Roz gave him a reassuring pat on the knee of his jeans.
"Did you see the man when he was talking to your dad?"
He shook his head again.
"No, I was upstairs. Then Roz called us down to dinner, but there was no man here."
A few more questions and they let him go.
"Do you want to see the twins together, or one by one?" Roz asked.
Pinto sighed and rubbed the stubble on his jaw.
"Together is fine. I know this seems like a waste of time, but we just have to do it, you know, so we can say our report is complete."
Somewhere a clock chimed. Was it 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock? Despite the horror of what they had seen, Pavano was starting to feel hungry. The twins plopped down on the couch, all blonde hair, wide eyes, and innocence. They were very cute, Pavano observed. They looked smaller than their 12 years. Their voices were little boys' voices. The two cops chit-chatted with them for a few minutes. Boys had funny accents, sort of English, sort of Irish. They didn't seem at all fazed by having to talk to policemen. Their answers turned out to be a lot more interesting than those of the two other kids.
"Did you see the man talking to Mr. Sutter?"
"Yes, sir."
The one with the dimples seemed to be the one who liked to talk.
"We saw him in the den with the new pa."
"The new pa?"
"That's what they call Mark," Roz interjected.
Pinto leaned forward in the big chair.
"You saw them in here when you boys came home from school?"
Both boys nodded.
"He was talking to the new pa, telling him bad things."
Pavano's breath caught in his throat. He squinted at the expressionless boy.
"Bad things?"
"Oh, for sure. He said he had bad news. The new pa looked very sad."
Pinto and Pavano exchanged glances. Pinto cleared his throat. Roz suddenly looked troubled, her lips pursed tightly. She started to say something, but Pinto motioned for her to remain silent.
"So, what did you do?"
Pinto asked.
"Sammy and I took a ball and went outside to play."
"Did you hear the man have a fight with your dad?"
"No, they weren't fighting, just talking. Right, Sammy?"
Sammy nodded his head solemnly.
"Were they arguing, you know, shouting?"
"No, just talking,"
Daniel insisted.
"But I think Pa was a wee bit angry."
The quiet one spoke up.
"Daniel and I went out to play catch with a tennis ball."
"Where did you play?" Pavano asked.
"By the driveway, you know, next to the garage."
"And so you saw the man's dark blue car?"
Pinto asked. They both nodded.
"The ball bounced off it a couple of times, don't you know, but it didn't make a dent."
"And did you see the man leave the house?"
They nodded again.
"Did you see him get into his car?"
Daniel nodded.
"He got in his big car, and the new pa shouted at us." "He said, 'Get out of the way,'"
the brother chimed in.
"He said the man was backing up and we should get out of the way."
"So what did you do?"
"We went back to our house, in the garden."
"Your house?"
"Their room is in the guest house," Roz explained. "That's where they're staying."
"You went back to your room, and you didn't hear anything strange, did you? See anyone come to the driveway? Did you hear a shout or a fight or anything weird?"
The twins exchanged puzzled glances again. They shook their heads.
"We didn't hear anything. Not a peep, sir."
Pavano heard a baby crying somewhere. Roz jumped to her feet.
"That's Axel, my little boy. He's waking up from his nap. Officers, I have to go upstairs and get him. I'm afraid this interview session is over."
Pinto climbed up with a groan. Pavano's head suddenly felt like solid granite.
Too much. This is too much to think about.
They followed Roz to the front. Before they could exit, the screen door swung open. A uniform cop, one of the crime scene guys, poked his head into the house.
Sergeants, one more bit of info you can add to your report.
What's that? Pinto asked.
Pavano pulled out his phone to write it down.
That blowtorch in the garage? We went over it. It looks like it's been used recently.
Chapter 33.
I wish I was with you, Mark. I'm so sorry I'm not there to help you. Roz must be a mess, too. Leah, is it too late for the jitney? Can you get a train? I'll pick you up in Southampton. Mark, you're breaking up. I can't hear too well. Are the kids okay? Are they upset?
I don't know if they realize what happened. I think they're mainly confused. I'm going to try to talk to them later, after the police leave, you know. Try to see how they feel, what they know.
How can you explain it to them? A murder? Right at our house?
I'll just be straight with them. I mean, I don't know how else to handle it. Just tell them what happened and be there for them.
Oh, wow, I have the shakes just thinking about it. Right in front of our house, and you didn't hear anything? You didn't see anyone go up to his car?
None of us did.
Listen, I'm worried about the kids, Mark. Poor Ira, something like this, horrible murder in our front yard. I mean, how much more traumatic can it be?
He was up in his room. I don't think he realizes. I'm going to sit down and talk to them all, get their feelings out in the open.
I can't hear you very well. You keep breaking up. I'll try to get back as fast as I can, darling. I'll cancel my meeting for tomorrow morning. I'll let you know what jitney I'm on. I'm so sorry I'm not there with you, sweetheart.
Are you feeling okay? I really didn't think you were ready for the city. Those nightmares you were having and the tomato soup thing.
You're breaking up, Mark. What did you say?
Do you feel okay?
Actually, no. Maybe you were right. Maybe the city visit was too soon. I feel weird. I can't really explain it. Kind of like I can't concentrate. I don't really feel I'm totally in control. It's nothing, I'm sure. Just tired, I guess.
Please, get home as fast as you can. We need you here. I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, when word of this gets out, you know, I'm a public figure now. The publicity, gruesome murder in best-selling psychologist's driveway.
It could get bad, Leah.
But you had nothing to do with the murder.
Don't be naive, sweetheart. Does that matter?
It happened in our fucking driveway. If the details are released, can you see the front of the post?
I'm so sorry, honey. I can't hear. I'll text you my jitney.
A soft click, then silence. The connection was lost. Mark headed to the bar against the den wall. I need something stronger than wine. And then he felt a stab of anger.
How can she be away when I need her, when we all need her here?
He knew what he was doing. It was obvious. He was angry at himself for what happened with Autumn, and he was transferring his anger to Leah. Embarrassing to be so obvious.
Autumn, you missed all the excitement.
He thought about kissing her, fucking her on top of his desk.
Oh, Jesus.
The two police officers left. He saw two other cops in the driveway working over the car. They had set up halogen spotlights on poles to light their work. Yellow crime tape had been stretched across the bottom of the front yard. Cars moved slowly on the street, gawkers wondering what had happened there. Mark shook his head and took a long sip of his Crucian single-barrel rum. The neighbors must have their binoculars out. Luckily, the houses were far apart, separated by tall, old oak and sassafras trees and high evergreen hedges. Mark had no idea who his neighbors were. Richard Hulenberger's body had been removed, wrapped and carried away in a silent ambulance. Now, gazing into the white halogen light, Mark saw that the car seats were on their backs on the lawn. One cop was leaning into the trunk, sweeping it with some kind of whirring device, a vacuum. He gathered the four kids in the den while Roz went to feed and entertain Axel. The den had two brown soft leather couches at a 90-degree angle against two walls and a matching recliner chair, all facing a 55-inch flat-screen TV mounted on the only wall without bookshelves. A stack of glass shelves to the right of the TV screen held Leah's stuffed monkey collection, dozens of specimens. Leah wasn't embarrassed to show off her monkeys. She told anyone who asked that growing up in a house jammed with so many kids, she never had room for any kind of collection. In a way, the mostly hideous monkeys were fulfilling a lifelong dream. Samuel and Daniel sank into one couch and slumped down, looking uncomfortable, troubled. Elena took the recliner, sitting stiffly on the edge, not tilting back as she usually did. Ira perched next to her on one arm of the recliner. Mark studied them for a few seconds. Elena wore freshly applied lip gloss. Ira had a tomato sauce stain on his chin.
As you've probably figured out, something terrible happened in our driveway this afternoon. The man who was visiting me was murdered by someone.
Elena rolled her eyes.
Dad, please, tell us something we don't know.
Mark's impulse was to scold her for being so flip, but he quickly remembered that her attitude might be her way of dealing with something frightening.
Elena, not appropriate. Sorry. I don't really know much about it, he confessed, standing awkwardly in front of them as if giving a lecture.
He had set down his glass, but found himself craving another few sips of rum.
But if I can answer any questions, I know you must be upset and maybe confused.
Ira spoke up first.
Dad, did the killer mean to kill you?
The question made him suck in a burst of air, not a question he expected.
No, I don't think so, Ira. The police didn't have anything to say about that. I don't think anyone wants to kill me.
Ira screwed up his face, thinking hard.
But will the killer come in the house?
No, Mark answered quickly, without wanting to think about that. No one is coming in the house. We're all safe here. You don't have to be scared. We are all completely safe.
Elena shifted her weight on the edge of the recliner.
Does this mean that Ruth Ann can't come for a sleepover Friday night?
Mark blinked. Is she totally self-involved? Doesn't she react at all to someone being murdered in front of her house? Maybe that's a good thing.
I don't see any reason why Ruth Ann can't come Friday, Elena, but I think the news of what happened here will be out by then. We'll have to talk with her parents.
Maybe she'll be too scared to come over,
Ira suggested in a tiny voice. Elena wrapped her hands over Ira's shoulders.
Well, you'll protect her, won't you, big guy?
Ira squirmed out from under her hands.
Shut up!
Don't tease Ira, Mark scolded.
Sorry,
Elena murmured. She gave Ira a bump with her shoulder.
It's just that I'll be so upset if we don't have our sleepover. We've planned it for weeks.
Shouldn't be a problem, Mark said.
And suddenly both twins were on their feet, both with the same forlorn expressions. Daniel's eyes brimmed with tears. He took a tentative step toward Mark.
Can I have a hug?
In a tiny, high voice, he rushed into Mark's open arms.
Me too, Samuel said. Can I have a hug, please?
Mark wrapped them both in a tight hug. He could feel their trembling bodies. They both made sniffling sounds. Glancing over their heads, he caught Elena's trembling-chinned expression. She was near tears, too. Not as skeptical as he thought. Ira sat with his arms crossed tightly in front of him, staring into the distance. Mark tried to pull his arms away, but the boys clung to him.
Hug,
Daniel said, burying his face in Mark's shirt.
Hug,
Samuel repeated. Chapter 34. Samuel closed the guesthouse door behind him, making sure it clicked shut. The two boys strode into their room. Each climbed onto one of the low twin beds, one against each wall. They stood up and bounced on the beds for a few moments, a gleeful trampoline act. Bright lights set up by the police officers in the driveway broke the darkness outside their curtained window. The light swooped across the flowered wallpaper and caught the two boys as they leaped and bounced.
Smoked meat,
Daniel said when they finally slumped to their beds.
Smoked meat,
Samuel repeated.
There was Daniel being Daniel again.
Daniel stuck his chin out defiantly.
Smoked meat, smoked meat, smoked meat.
Samuel sighed.
Yes, the man was smoked meat, but this will keep Pa busy for a while. I know, Daniel, but we just got here. Perhaps we need to go slow.
Daniel giggled.
You loved it too, laddie. I saw your eyes shine. You wanted a taste of that smoked meat.
Samuel bounced lightly on the bed.
Don't be making a joke, Daniel. We don't eat smoked meat anymore, remember?
Daniel giggled again.
Did you put the blowtorch back where we got it?
Samuel nodded.
Sure I did. But I don't really understand why we needed it, boyo. To keep Pa busy. To give the coppers something to puzzle about, don't you know?
Samuel's expression changed. He stood up and crossed to his brother. He put his hands on Daniel's shoulders and peered down at him.
I know you like a bit of fun. You too. But if we get caught, it's all off. All off. And why did we adopt the new mum? Remember?
Daniel grinned up at him.
To rule the school? Yes, to rule the school. But if we go too fast...
Daniel removed his twin's hands from his shoulders. His eyes flashed. Samuel knew that expression. Thoughtful. Devilishly thoughtful.
Pa doesn't want us. He doesn't like us. So we have to keep him busy, out of our hair, don't you know? And then, Sammy, and then, who will help us rule the school? Do you know? Can you guess? Who will be the first to help us?
Samuel stuck out his jaw.
I can't read your mind now, can I? Especially not your mind. The brother and sister,
Daniel said. Samuel stared at him.
Who? The brother and sister,
his twin repeated.
You know, Ira and Elena. The two of them. Help us.
Daniel nodded enthusiastically, eyes aglow.
The brother and sister know people, Sammy. They have friends, right? They know things. They will help us rule the school. They'll join us, and then more and more.
Daniel jumped to his feet and pumped his fists above his head.
More and more and more. And when we own all the kids, we own the town. It'll be all ours, all. And what does it take, Sammy? You know the answer. Teamwork, boyo. Teamwork wins the day. Daniel, listen to me. What if Ira and Elena don't want to join us? What if they tell Mum and Pa?
Daniel giggled. His grin made his dimples flare.
I will convince the brother and sister.
Samuel stared at him.
Convince them? Okay, but no smoked meat, Daniel. Okay? No smoked meat?
Daniel nodded.
Total domination, Sammy. You'll see. Total domination.
A hard knock on the door ended the discussion. The door swung open, and Roz edged into the room, carrying a round tray with a bowl and glasses.
You boys didn't get much dinner, what with the police and all. I brought you some Cokes and a big bowl of popcorn.
Sweet smiles on both boys.
Oh, me goodness, thank you, Auntie Roz,
said Samuel. Daniel's eyes lit up with glee and his dimples flashed.
Thank you, Auntie. Who loves a popcorn? We do. Pop, pop, pop.
Part 3. Chapter 35.
Mark wrapped his arms tightly around Leah's waist and pressed his face against her cheek. I'm so glad you're here. She stepped back, nearly stumbling over her overnight bag. Her dark eyes flashed.
Takes a murderer to make you miss me so much? Don't make jokes, please. It's been horrible for all of us. I'm so sorry I couldn't get back last night, honey. The jitney was booked and I missed the last train. Then this morning there was an accident on the expressway and look at the clock, it's nearly 2.
It's okay, Leah. You're here now. He pulled her close again and kissed her.
How are the kids? I worried about them all night. Are they...
Roz and I got them off to school. They seem to be okay. A little quiet, maybe. Ira's glum, but I don't think more glum than usual.
The morning papers could have been worse, she said,
tugging off her red jacket and tossing it on a chair. She straightened her t-shirt and pulled it out from her jeans. For sure it could be worse. The police didn't reveal the details. Too sickening, I guess. If they had, it would have been on every front page.
Leah touched his face. Poor baby. I feel so bad for you. Did you see the body?
No, I... He reached for her again. He had a sudden desire to pull up her t-shirt and kiss her all over. The doorbell interrupted. Mark glanced over Leah's shoulder and saw two dark-uniformed men peering through the screen door. He recognized the two cops from the night before. He groaned. Leah turned to the door. Hello?
It's Sergeant Pinto and Pavano, the big older cop said. Sorry to interrupt.
Leah pushed open the door and they entered, both removing their dark caps. Pinto studied Leah. He had a toothpick riding up and down between his teeth. Mark smelled tobacco on the other one. Pavano held his arms tense at his sides, as if expecting trouble. He always looks uncomfortable, like he knows he's chosen the wrong line of work. This is my wife, Leah, Mark gestured to the suitcases. She's just back from the city. The cops nodded at her. Pinto's eyes lingered longer than Mark thought they should. Pinto removed the toothpick and shoved it into his uniform shirt pocket.
Sorry for interrupting your afternoon, Mrs. Sutter. We need to speak to your husband for a few minutes.
I've already answered all your questions, Mark snapped. Do I need my lawyer?
If you prefer, Pinto said, but then we'd have to have our talk at the station.
But I've told you everything I know.
We're making a report for the state guys now, Pinto said. They're probably going to send their own cops down. They'll ask you the same questions. Then if the feds get into it, his voice trailed off.
It won't take long, Pavano said. We have some test results.
Results? You mean like fingerprints? You got them overnight?
The lab guys don't get cases like this very often, Pavano said.
Perhaps if we could sit down,
Pinto motioned toward Mark's office down the hall. Mark sighed. Leah shrugged. She lifted the overnight bag. I'll go unpack, then maybe I'll make a nice dinner before the kids get home. She turned to Mark. Unless you need me. He shook his head. Go ahead, dear, no problem. He turned and led the two cops into his office. Autumn had left a stack of mail on his chair. She arrived late that morning and didn't have work on her mind. Shining those beautiful eyes on him, she'd slid his hand over her breasts. Then she got all pouty when he told her Leah was coming home. Autumn was young and beautiful and sexy, but seeing her made him feel sick now. How was he going to deal with her? If he told her yesterday morning was a one-time thing, would she go berserk? Tell Leah? He couldn't fire her. That would be a definite lawsuit, and it would mean more hideously damaging newspaper stories. And how did he feel about her? He hadn't had time to sort it out. He knew he didn't want to hurt her, but he also knew that Leah meant everything to him. He had done a stupid, impulsive thing, so unlike him, so totally unlike him. He knew he needed to think about this all, but with the murder... The two cops were staring at him, trying to read his thoughts. Did he appear tense to them? Would they misinterpret it and decide he was guilty in some way? He removed the stack of letters from his chair and sat down. Once again, they took their places on the green leather couch facing the desk. Pinto dropped his cap onto the floor in front of him. Pavano pulled out his phone to take notes. He tapped a slow rhythm with the fingers of his other hand on the couch arm.
One more time, Pinto said. The victim brought you bad news, right? Very bad news.
Well, yeah, Mark replied, but I told you, he was just the messenger. It wasn't his fault I didn't get the grant. The board voted. They just sent him to tell me.
And I know you've already stated this. Your feeling when he told you, angry?
Disappointed, Mark corrected him. Pavano tapped something into his phone. Then he raised his head and gazed intently at Mark. The victim's car was in the driveway for how long before you noticed it? Maybe 15 minutes, maybe 20. You don't think it's strange that a car should sit in your driveway 20 minutes and you didn't notice it? Mark shrugged. What can I tell you? I didn't see it. And you never looked out the window and saw anyone approach the car? No, I didn't, I told you. You never noticed another car drive by or stop? No, I didn't look out the front, You saw no one in your front yard? No one walk up to your driveway? This is getting repetitious, Mark said. Easy, don't let them rattle you.
Pinto nodded. I know. We have to do this.
He glanced at the notes on his partner's phone.
Mr. Sutter, we have test results that show your blowtorch was recently used.
Mark blinked. His mind went blank for a moment. What can I say? What can I tell them? Yes, I used it. Ira and I were doing a project.
A project?
Yeah, metalwork. We were building a robot, actually. I do these projects, They're good for Ira, help him build confidence.
So, if we ask your son about the blowtorch, he'll back up your story?
Well, actually, no, he wasn't home. I used the blowtorch on the robot while he was in school. Mark could feel his face go hot. Pinto shifted his weight.
Could you show us this robot that you used the blowtorch on? Is it here?
I know this sounds bad, Sergeant, but the robot disappeared. Ira took it to school and it disappeared from the art room. They both squinted at him. I'm telling the truth. It must have been stolen. His face still felt blazing hot.
The lab guys seem to think the blowtorch could have been used yesterday as the murder weapon.
I don't know anything about that. The garage door was open. Anyone could have taken it out. A long silence.
Well, we have fingerprint results on the victim's car, Pavano said finally. He flipped through some screens on his phone.
Mark felt his throat tighten.
The CS guys found only children's prints, Pinto said. Children's prints on both front doors. And then there were three other prints, round, like a ball had hit the car.
They hadn't asked a question, but they waited for Mark to say something. He leaned over the desk. He cleared his throat.
I'm not surprised by that, he said.
The two cops waited for him to continue.
The twins, Mark said. I believe you talked to them, and they told you they were playing with a tennis ball at the side of the driveway.
And it's their prints on the car? Pinto said.
Pretty good bet, Mark said, and then regretted sounding so sarcastic. They were playing catch. They said the ball hit Hulenberger's car a few times.
Cops nodded. He could see they were studying him.
And my prints, they must have been there, Mark said. Remember? I gripped the side of the door, under the window.
Actually, the crime scene guys couldn't get any good prints, Pinto said. Blood was too smeared.
Pavano was flipping through his phone screens. Pinto licked at the side of his mouth.
So, the twins saw Hulenberger get into his car. I recall that's what they said. But then they didn't see anyone come up the drive. They didn't see someone come up to the car.
I told them to get out of the way, Mark said. I told them to watch out. He was backing up.
And do they always obey you really quickly? Pinto asked, leaning forward.
Mark pushed back from the desk. I don't understand that question, officer. What are you saying? That the boys stayed by the front? That they might have seen something?
Pinto and Pavano exchanged glances.
They might have, Pinto said finally. And maybe they're afraid to tell us?
They were there, Pavano added. It's hard to believe they didn't see anything at all.
Mark rubbed his chin. The beard was getting long. He needed to trim it.
You may be right. Sometimes when kids are traumatized by something they've seen, they manage to lock it away, push it to a back burner, so to speak.
Sometimes the fear is so powerful they just force it from their memory. Stress-related memory loss is very common. The cops nodded. Pavano clicked away on his phone. Pinto climbed to his feet with a groan. His shirt had pulled out over his pot belly.
And sometimes do kids lie to stay out of trouble?
He asked. Mark stood up too. He didn't answer the question. He knew it wasn't really a question. He didn't know the twins well enough to know how truthful they were. They seemed sweet and innocent, but of course kids can put on quite a show for grown-ups when they want to. If the boys saw something frightening, if they witnessed the murder, he felt terrible for them. What a welcome to their new home. And then he had a memory flash. I did see them at the side of the house. When I ran out to Hulenberger's car, the twins were standing at the side of the house. They weren't in back, they were there.
We'll want to talk to the boys, Pinto said, studying Mark's face.
Mark returned his stare.
With me in the room?
No, but we'll have a psychologist in the room. We'll make sure they're comfortable. You can wait right outside, if you wish to have a lawyer present.
That was a challenge. Mark felt a stab of anger.
Because you think if I'm not there, the boys are going to incriminate me?
Well, that isn't going to happen. You know the expression, barking up the wrong tree, I'm sure? They both grunted in reply. Mark led them down the hall and held open the screen door for them. After they had driven away, he found Leah in the kitchen stirring an iced coffee.
That was weird, Leah poured in an envelope of equal.
You were listening? She nodded. She raised her eyes to him.
Mark, why did you lie to the police?
He blinked. He could feel the blood pulse at his temple.
You mean about the blowtorch thing?
She nodded.
A robot project? You and Ira never built a robot. Why did you say that?
I needed an answer, Leah. I needed to tell them something. They said the blowtorch had been used. I guess I panicked a little. I mean, I couldn't explain it. I thought it would be better to give them something. She studied him.
But Mark, it wasn't a good lie. They can check it easily. I don't understand.
Why are you looking at me like that? You don't think that I...
Of course not.
She stepped around the counter and took his hand in hers.
But look at you. Your face is all red, and...
He let her hand slide away. Forget about the blowtorch. That's not important. The twins were out front when Hulenberger left. The cops think they might have seen the murderer. Leah gasped.
Oh, those poor boys. They must be so scared.
Actually, they seem fine, Mark said, taking a sip of her iced coffee. You need more ice.
You know I don't like it too cold.
The twins said they didn't see anything. They said they went back to the guest house when Hulenberger started to back down the drive.
And you don't believe them?
Her voice rose a few octaves. She gripped the glass with both hands.
The way you said that, you think they were lying?
All honesty, I don't know what to think. I remember seeing them at the top of the driveway when I discovered the murder. She shook her head.
Listen, Mark, I know you didn't want those boys to come here, but they are sweet, lovely boys. And accusing them of lying is...
We don't know what kind of boys they are, Leah. We don't know anything about them. Yes, I didn't want you to bring them here, but I'm giving them every chance, and I didn't accuse them of lying. If they saw something horrible, it's possible...
He stopped,
spun around at the sound of a cough. The twins stood side by side in the kitchen doorway.
How long have you been standing there?
It came out like an accusation. They didn't answer. Instead, broad smiles crossed their faces. They dove across the room to wrap Leah in enthusiastic hugs.
The new mom is home! Mom is home! Yay!
Chapter 36.
Where are we going, Daniel? To find the brother.
The twins wore their colorful surfer swimsuits, still crinkly and stiff, and white sleeveless t-shirts that came down nearly to their knees. Their plastic flip-flops clopped on the pavement. Daniel took long strides, eyes straight ahead. Samuel struggled to keep up. A mail carrier in his tiny white truck waved as he putted past. Samuel returned the wave and watched a chipmunk dart under the truck's wheels. He waited for the bump and then the squish, but the little animal scampered out the other side.
Close call,
Samuel murmured. Daniel didn't reply. He appeared lost in thought. The blue of his eyes had faded, as if all of his energy was retreating into his mind. Samuel had seen him disappear into himself before. They turned onto Long Point Road, which snaked along the bay. Samuel's flip-flop snagged a clump of tall grass, and he had to stop to free himself. The afternoon sun beamed down on his face, making it feel more like July than May.
Hey, Daniel, wait up! Do you mind telling me where we're headed, laddie?
Daniel kicked pebbles into the tall grass along the side of the street. Tall, leafy hedges hid the houses that lined the water.
Ethan's house,
he said finally. He pointed.
Up there. Ira is swimming there with his friend,
Samuel said.
That's why we're walking there? To swim?
Daniel wheeled around, startling his twin.
Time to get in the swim, right, Sammy? Get in the swim. You know, rule the pool.
Samuel started to laugh, but cut it short. He could see that his brother wasn't joking around.
You mean... The new pa doesn't like us,
Daniel said, a sneer making his features hard. His eyes suddenly ice instead of sky.
The new pa doesn't want us. The new pa is our enemy. Yes, I know that, boyo. The new mum will do anything for us, but pa fights her. He shouts at her. He doesn't want to give us what we want. He is our enemy. Yes. So we keep him busy. I understand what you're saying, but what are you thinking? What does it mean, Daniel? Go ahead, tell me.
Daniel stared so intently at his twin, Samuel had to turn away.
What it means is... What it means is... We don't have to take our time, Sammy lad. We can make our move now. It doesn't matter. We've no one to impress. We don't have to pretend any more. That's good news, right? You want to rule the pool and rule the school? But if we waited...
Samuel gazed at two fat yellow bees fighting over a tiny blossom tucked in the hedge beside them.
Even bees fight, but not like Daniel.
The mailman waved again, moving the other direction in his stupid little cart truck. This time, Samuel ignored the grinning jerk.
Daniel, we already murdered someone to keep Pa busy. Maybe if we take our time, go a little slow. Slow is no,
Daniel sneered. He saw the bumblebees too. He moved quickly, reached into the hedge, cupped them both in his hands and flattened them between his palms.
Slow is no.
He squeezed his hands together, grinding the bees flat.
Mum deserves a better man,
Daniel said, wiping his palms on the front of his t-shirt.
Mum deserves better. She'll want us to rule the school, Sammy. It will make Mum happy. You'll see.
Samuel shrugged. His face felt burning hot, not just from the sun. He knew he'd already lost the argument.
What do you plan to do?
Test the brother.
What?
Test Ira.
You're going to start with Ira?
First Ira, then the sister. We have to show him. We have to dominate him. Dominate him to win him over.
Right, Sammy.
Daniel didn't wait for Samuel to reply. He turned and started walking again, running his hand along the hedge, making bees fly and butterflies jump.
We have no choice. It's time to start. And we will start by dominating the brother.
They turned, and Samuel followed his twin up a smoothly paved driveway that led to a wide three-car garage attached to a white frame house. He could hear the splash of water from behind the house and recognized Ira's laugh.
Are we going to swim, Daniel? Can't we have a nice swim first?
Daniel kept walking.
We need to test the brother. What are you going to do?
Samuel jogged to catch up. He grabbed his twin's shoulders and spun him to face him.
What are you going to do to Ira?
A crooked smile crossed Daniel's face, and his eyes regained their deep blue liveliness.
Maybe see how long he can stay underwater.
This audiobook has been broken into multiple parts to make the download faster. You have reached the end of a part, but not the end of the complete audiobook. So please check your library for the next part of this audiobook.
Chapter 37.
The lovemaking didn't seem the same. Was it just his guilt? No, Mark wasn't imagining it. They'd been married 14 years, long enough to know each other's every move. 14 years, and suddenly he decided to try another woman. No, not a woman. A girl. So yes, guilt had to play a part here. Afterward, cradled in her arm, waiting for his heartbeats to slow and his breath to come easier, tapping one finger on his sweat-damp chest, he pictured the young Leah, only 22 when they got married. What could she have been thinking? He saw the diamond sparkle of her dark eyes and remembered how sunlight shone in her hair, softer and flowing down past her shoulders then. What year was it? Yes, 1998. In another millennium. She smelled like lemons, sweet lemons. When did she change her scent? Once you start seeing the past, pictures fly at you as if falling out of an old album. Does anyone still keep photo albums? He saw Leah's roommate, the lanky, toothy girl with the sexy laugh, always pushing her coppery hair off her face, twisting it in her fingers, popping her chewing gum with that smile as if it was some kind of clever joke. Claire. Leah had moved from Rockford to New York with Claire. Their big adventure. Thank God Claire had a thing for the First Avenue bars, for that's where Mark met Leah. Very romantic, the two of them breathing beer fumes on each other. Did she feel the instant connection he did? Of course it was entirely physical.
And what a jerk he must have been that night, trying so hard to impress her with his stories about college life in Madison and his studies in psychology. He even bragged about his father being such a hotshot Park Avenue shrink. Can you imagine using his father? Lying beside her, he cringed. 14 years later, he shut his eyes and tried to make the hideous memory go away. Claire. Think about Claire. Claire Shiner. Yes, it took this long for her last name to reboot. Claire got pregnant. What did she expect, picking up men in the bars every weekend? Always so horny and obvious about it. She decided to go home to Rockford to have the baby. If she hadn't gone home, Leah wouldn't have needed a roommate. Leah, he remembered, worked as an intern at the New York Press, a weekly giveaway newspaper. She couldn't afford that East Side apartment she and Claire shared, tiny and sordid and odorous as it was. Would she and Mark have moved in together if Claire hadn't fucked her way back to Rockford? All so romantic. The breeze from the open window made him shiver. He wanted to slide under the covers, but he couldn't tell if Leah was awake. Don't move. This is too nice. Too nice. In bed with Leah in the afternoon. A lovemaking matinee like young people. It seldom happened in this crowded house. He listened to the sweep of the curtains making the sunlight dance across their bed. Silence everywhere else. Ira was swimming at Ethan's house. The twins had pulled on their swimsuits and hurried off to join him. Roz had dropped Elena and Ruth Ann at the Bridgehampton Mall. Roz and Axel were... he wasn't quite sure where they were. So hard to keep track of everyone. So maybe the illicit nature of this rare chance increased his expectations. No, that wasn't it. Sure, he was eager. He hadn't seen her in a week. And in a way, he wanted to reassure himself that they were okay, that he hadn't screwed up anything. No, you're thinking too hard, Mark. She had welcomed him with that little sigh from deep in her throat that she always made when he entered her, and he felt the same surge of joy as they began. But it didn't take long to realize that it was different. Numb. Such a strangely out-of-place word. But as he moved on top of her, the word invaded his thoughts. Numb. And he realized he was doing it all, and she was just accepting. She had her arms around his neck and then his waist, but she didn't grasp him with the strength she always had. And her eyes, gazing over his rolling shoulders, yes, she seemed distant, numb. She wasn't reacting, and she wasn't trying to hide it. When he finished, she murmured, "Nice," and her eyes settled on him for a moment before losing their focus and settling back into what seemed to be a hazy world of her own thoughts. "Leah, is everything okay? You seem so far away. I could see on your face." He took a breath. "You're still on that island, aren't you?" It took her a long time to respond, and then she nodded her head, her gaze not on him but at the ceiling. "Yes, still on the island," whispered so that the words sent a chill down his neck. "Still on the island. Still back there." A long sigh. "So many nightmares. Every night. Nightmares pulling me there, pulling me into all that death and horror. I can't get the wailing out of my ears. The wailing and the moaning and the crying. It's like I'm still there. Still there." She squeezed his hand. "But I want to come back, Mark. I really do." And then an abrupt move. To break the sadness? Pushing him aside, she stood up. "The kids will be home soon." It was still a thrill to watch her walk naked across the room. She vanished into the bathroom, and he thought of Autumn. "I can't keep her around. I don't want to ruin my life." And what could he do to help Leah? The things she saw on that island, he felt as if he could see them too, in her eyes. Numb. She had gone numb. That will just take time. He felt a heaviness lower over him, his eyelids suddenly heavy. What a luxury a Saturday afternoon nap would be. He pulled the quilt up, shut his eyes, and sank into the pillow. He drifted off. For how long? He didn't know. A gentle tapping sound woke him. He lifted his head to see Leah at her rosewood desk, her head a silhouette in the glow of her laptop monitor,
leaning toward the screen and typing rapidly. She moved her lips when she typed. So cute. It always made him smile. But her back was turned, and he could see only the bobbing of her hair, pulled back in a loose ponytail, and the fingers of her right hand tap-dancing over the keys. "Hi," he called. "How long did I sleep?" "Not long." She didn't turn around. She was wearing a light green beach cover-up. Mark pulled himself up.
"It's a beautiful day. Feels like summer.
Maybe we should round up the kids and drive to the beach. Sag Main?" She shook her head.
"No, think I need to get this written."
"The island? You getting your experience there in writing?" She kept typing. Her head nodded toward the screen, then pulled back.
"I'm not writing about that."
"What?" He stood up quickly. The breeze from the window tickled his skin. The short sleep had revived him. He did 3 or 4 knee bends just to show off to himself. He walked to the dresser and pulled out a red Nike swimsuit. Tugging it on, he stepped up behind her.
"What are you writing about?" "Something different."
He chuckled and cupped his hands over her shoulders. "You're being secretive."
"Yes."
He leaned over her shoulder to read what she had written. "You don't have any secrets from your husband, do you?" He thought of Autumn. She lowered her hands to her lap.
"I just have some new ideas."
He squinted at the screen and his eyes scanned her last paragraph.
"Tibet's inhuman climate and hard, stony ground makes burial nearly impossible. This is why Buddhists there choose a sky burial. Upon death, the body is chopped into small pieces which are mixed with flour. Then the remains are spread out over a tree to be eaten by scavenging birds."
Mark stood up and released her shoulders.
"Leah, what is this, dead Buddhists in Tibet? Sky burial?"
She turned and raised her face to him. The light from the laptop monitor bathed her in gray.
"Death rituals,"
she said, just above a whisper.
"I've been doing some research."
She hadn't said anything funny. Why did she have that strange, guilty smile on her face?
"Your blog," he said. "You're not going to write your travel blog?"
She shook her head. The strange smile remained.
"I've kind of lost interest in that."
"But you've put so much time and effort." She shrugged and turned her face away.
"I can't write it anymore. It's just not interesting to me, you know? I have to write what I'm interested in. I've always been that way."
He blinked at the screen.
"But, sweetheart, death rituals? Why death rituals? It's all so fascinating. Did you know there's a province in Madagascar where people pull the dead out from their graves and dance with them? Every 7 years, Mark, they dig up their relatives and dance with them. Isn't that sweet?"
"Sweet?" He took a step back. He watched her type. She leaned toward the screen as if she wanted to dive in. Her eyes were narrowed in concentration.
"As if I'm not here.
Sky burials? Dancing with the dead? Leah, should I be worried about you?" Chapter 38.
"Hey, how'd you get here?"
Ira raised his head from the fat blue inner tube and squinted at the twins as they pulled back the gate and stepped onto the deck.
"Walked,"
Daniel answered.
Samuel had never seen anything as beautiful as this pool. It was long and wide, nearly the length of the house. The pool walls were a light blue, sky blue. The water sparkled with little patches of sunlight.
"As if little chunks of the sun had fallen into the pool," he thought. He wanted to dive in and scoop them up.
He just wanted to sink into the water, immerse himself in the clear, clean cold, be clear and clean himself.
But he knew Daniel had other plans.
"You guys know how to swim?"
Ethan sat on the edge of the deep end, blonde hair as bright as the sunlight, leaning down to fill a yellow and red plastic water blaster.
"We swim," Daniel said. "We lived on an island, remember, lad? Sammy and I swam before we could walk."
"That's cool,"
Ethan replied. Samuel had never seen a boy so pale, nearly as white as the fence surrounding the pool deck. He could see Ethan's ribcage poking out from his chest.
"He's puny for 12. The boy needs to pump up. Maybe we can help him. If Daniel doesn't drown the lad today."
Ethan dipped the blaster under the water. Then he raised it and shot a lazy spray of water across the pool to Ira. Floating drowsily on his tube, luxuriating with his eyes closed, Ira didn't even notice.
"Is the water warm?"
Samuel dropped to his knees and ran a hand through it. Under the surface, he could feel the spray of cold water shooting into the pool.
Nice.
Ethan aimed carefully and sent a long spray of water into Ira's face. Ira spluttered and dove off the tube. Ethan laughed. He had a dry cackle of a laugh.
Like an old witch, Samuel thought.
Ira floated beneath the surface. He rose up in front of Ethan and spit a long stream of water onto his legs. Daniel grabbed the chrome ladder and lowered himself into the water. He pushed himself away from the wall and paddled toward Ira.
How long can you stay underwater?
He asked, bobbing in a spill of gold sunlight. Ira's head sank into the water again. He rose up and spit another mouthful onto Ethan's legs. Ethan gave him a blast between the eyes with a plastic squirt blaster.
How long?
Daniel insisted, following Ira across the pool. Samuel's body felt sticky and drenched with sweat from the walk to Ethan's house. He held his breath and leaped into the deep end. The shock of the cold water made him gasp, and he came up to the surface spluttering.
Ira can stay underwater for a whole minute, he heard Ethan tell Daniel. I've seen him.
Daniel eyed Ira.
A whole minute?
Ira shrugged his skinny shoulders.
Yeah, I guess.
Samuel didn't want to listen. He knew the routine. He ducked underwater and swam the length of the pool. It felt so fresh and cold and made his body tingle.
Alive. I feel alive.
When he resurfaced, Daniel was continuing his act.
Do you have a timer?
He called to Ethan. Ethan set down the water blaster.
There's a stopwatch on my dad's iPhone. Go get it, Daniel ordered. You can time Ira and me.
Ethan started to the house. His swimsuit hung on him down to his knees.
Wait, Ethan, you ought to be in the contest.
Daniel's voice made a ringing sound over the water. Ethan turned back.
I don't want to swim. I have a scrape on my arm from the cat, and the chlorine makes it hurt. Ethan is not a superhero,
Samuel thought, snickering. He made himself heavy and sank to the pool bottom, then kicked back up.
I could live in the water. Only place I feel alive.
The kitchen door slammed behind Ethan. Samuel slid onto his back and floated, gazing up at the sun-streaked sky.
I think I can stay under longer than a minute,
Daniel told Ira. The two of them held sides of the tube, bobbing with it. Samuel spotted another inflated float leaning against a green chaise longue, shaped like a big gray whale.
That would be fun to ride, but Daniel has his own fun in mind. I can maybe do longer than a minute,
Ira said without much conviction.
Want to go first?
Ira shook his head.
Why don't you go first? Why don't you both go under at the same time?
Ethan said, reappearing on the deck with iPhone in hand. Daniel slipped off the tube and swung himself around to face Ethan.
No, I want the Ira lad to hold me under.
Ira made a kind of squawking sound.
What? Hold my hair, Daniel instructed. Push me under. Hold me down, okay? You have to hold me or I'll float to the top and you'll win.
Ira slid off the tube and pushed it toward the side of the pool.
You really want me to hold you under?
Daniel nodded.
Just grab my hair and push down on my head.
But how will I know when you want to come up?
No worries, Daniel told him. I'll give a signal.
You sure? Daniel grinned at him, dimples flashing.
Yes, I'm sure. Sure I'll win.
Samuel sighed. He dove under again, peaceful down below.
Daniel should have been an actor.
Samuel surfaced, shaking water from his thick blonde hair.
Go!
Ethan cried from the deck, eyes on the phone in his hand. Daniel let Ira push him under the surface. Ira gripped Daniel's hair and held his head down.
Hold on tight, Samuel said, bobbing closer. Don't let him come up. He said he'd signal,
Ira said, obviously not sure about this contest. Samuel floated in a circle around Ira. Ira kept Daniel down with one hand, paddled the surface with the other.
Push him, Samuel said. Keep pushing. But 1 minute,
Ethan called. He dropped onto the edge of a deck chair, concentrating on the phone. Samuel could see that Ethan's slender shoulders were already pink, sunburned.
It's kind of hard to keep him from floating up, Ira said. Keep pushing, Samuel told him. He has big lungs. He can stay down a long time.
He hasn't signaled, Ira said. Samuel watched his brother float under the rippling water, his arms limp and relaxed at his sides, legs not moving.
2 minutes,
Ethan called.
I
I think your brother wins, Ira said. 2 minutes, wow, I can't...
Hold him under, Samuel said. Don't ruin his turn. He gets angry if you ruin his turn.
Did he just signal?
Ira very tense now, the strain showing on his face, pale, his features tight.
I thought I saw him signal.
The muscle in the arm holding down Daniel quivered.
Not yet, Samuel said.
Underwater, Daniel floated perfectly upright, arms limp and relaxed.
3 minutes,
Ethan called, jumping to his feet.
That's enough, right?
He stepped to the edge of the pool, gazing down at Daniel's unmoving form.
People can't stay under this long, can they? He hasn't signaled,
Ira said in a wavering voice. Samuel and Ira both watched a string of bubbles float up from Daniel's mouth.
Is that the signal? He said he'd signal. 4 minutes. Are you sure he's okay?
Ethan lowered the phone.
I mean, really, is he okay? 4 minutes?
They all saw Daniel's head slump forward under the water. His head bent, and one last bubble slid up to the surface. Then his legs suddenly splayed and his arms floated limply to the top.
Let go of him!
Samuel screamed.
Something's wrong, Ira! Let go of him now!
Ira gasped and swallowed a mouthful of water. His hand flew off Daniel's head. Released, Daniel's body rose to the surface. His face appeared for only a moment, eyes closed, water spilling from his open jaw. Then his body tilted forward and he dropped face down, arms outstretched and limp.
Daniel! Daniel! Get up!
Samuel screamed.
Daniel! Daniel!
Ira uttered another hoarse squawk. He gaped, eyes bulging at the floating, lifeless raft that was Daniel.
Daniel! Daniel!
Ira dove toward Daniel, grabbed his arm, tried to tug him up, but he remained face down, bobbing on the surface, arms and legs floating at such odd angles as if they were all independent of each other.
You killed him!
Samuel shrieked. He slapped the water angrily with both hands, slapped it hard until it churned around him.
Ira, no! No, Ira, you killed him! You killed my brother!
A hoarse cry escaped Ira's throat. Ethan stood on the edge of the pool, his body trembling. He'd left the phone on the deck. His hands were pressed against the sides of his face.
No!
Ira wailed.
He didn't signal. It wasn't my fault.
He turned to Ethan.
Get help. Hurry.
Ethan didn't move.
My parents, they're not home.
Samuel splashed over to his brother.
Help me pull him out. Maybe we can get him breathing.
Another moan escaped Ira's open mouth. His eyes spun. His mouth twitched.
His face is going out of control. The poor kid is totally dazed.
Ira flailed across the water and grabbed Daniel's arm. And that's when Daniel lifted his head. Shot straight up, turned, grinning to Ira, and let out a loud laugh.
Oh!
Ira's hand slid off Daniel. The startled kid fell back, dipping under water for a second before reappearing, his face showing his disbelief. Daniel gave him a hard two-handed shove and laughed again, shaking water from his hair.
You're okay? He's okay?
Ethan shouted from the side, his voice high and shrill.
Is he really okay?
Ira still hadn't spoken. He bobbed in place, eyes on Daniel.
Why'd you let me up?
Daniel pushed Ira again, more gently this time.
I didn't signal. I wasn't finished.
But...
Ira struggled to find words.
It was 5 minutes.
Daniel laughed.
Did you forget? I told you, Sammy and I were swimming before we could walk.
But... that's impossible.
Ira shook his head.
5 minutes? I can't believe he's okay.
Ethan called.
Hey, get out of the pool. Let's get some snacks or something. Come on, I can't stop shaking. Get out, guys.
Samuel could see that Ira would love to climb out of the water and catch his breath, but Daniel raised a hand.
Whoa, it's Ira's turn.
Huh? No way. Ira slid back, rippling the water.
No way. I can't stay under for 5 minutes. You win.
Daniel grabbed Ira's shoulder.
You have to take your turn. Maybe you'll do better than a minute.
That would be cool, right, lad?
Ira didn't reply.
No, you win, Daniel. Let's get out.
Daniel grabbed Ira's hair.
Take your turn. Let's see how you do. Give me a signal. Just wave your arms when your chest starts to hurt. Okay.
He didn't wait for Ira's reply. He gave him a hard push and sent him sinking. Ira's head disappeared under the water. Samuel knew the smile on Daniel's face. He'd seen it before. Behind him, he heard a splash. He turned to see that Ethan had dropped into the pool. He was wading toward them.
Ira can only do a minute. I've seen him.
Daniel gripped Ira's hair tightly. He kept his arm stiff, pushing the boy down. A few bubbles escaped Ira's mouth. Daniel, still smiling, turned to Ethan.
What about keeping count? What are you doing here? You're supposed to time him.
Ethan peered down at Ira.
I told you, he can only do a minute.
A shadow swept over them as two large birds flapped overhead, squawking loudly. Samuel glanced up quickly. He lowered his eyes in time to see Daniel slide his other hand over Ira's head and push down with both hands. Ira's legs kicked slowly. Distorted by the water, they reminded Samuel of pale, rubbery snakes. And then the boy's arms shot out. He began waving wildly. Ethan stared at Daniel.
The signal! He wants to come up!
Daniel pushed down on Ira's head with both hands. The smile never left his face. Ira kicked and thrashed. He tried to twist his head out from Daniel's grasp, but Daniel held on tight. A stream of bubbles rose up from Ira's mouth.
Let him up! Ethan shouted. He's signaling! He's done!
Daniel held on tight, not moving. His jaw was clenched, nostrils flaring.
Let him up! Come on, Daniel, let him up!
Ira shot his feet out, twisted his head, raised both fists above the surface. Beneath the water, his body flopped like a frantic fish caught on a hook. Daniel scrunched up his face, his eyes shut, and pushed down on the struggling boy's hair, holding his head under the surface. Samuel wanted to sink under the water and never emerge.
Please, Daniel, don't do it. Please don't do it this time. Please stop now. Yes, I know why you're doing it. I know the new pod doesn't want us. I know you want to rule the pool. But please, Daniel, it's too soon. Please don't do it to Ira. Please.
Chapter 39. Why is Axel crying? Roz squinted at Mark. Why does the sun come up every morning? You're the child shrink, you tell me. Mark set down the book he'd been reading, a treatise about how sibling order determines your fate. So interesting how often the oldest sibling is the achiever in the family. He pulled off his reading glasses and folded them carefully. He grinned at his sister.
Maybe he's hungry.
Oh, wow. Genius. I never would have thought of that. Roz rolled her eyes. She tossed the ball of dirty laundry she was carrying onto his lap. He pulled a red pajama top off his head. He's bored, that's all. Let's pick up the boys and take everyone to the ocean. Roz started grabbing up the dirty clothes. I thought doing the laundry might be more fun. She turned as Axel came toddling into the room.
Beach! Beach! Beach!
He could always stop crying in a split second. Mark chuckled. He was listening to us.
He listens to everything, Roz said. He's a little spy.
Beach, beach, beach.
He reached for his mom to pick him up, but her arms were full of laundry, so he wrapped his hands around her knees.
Where are the boys?
At Ethan's house, all three of them. We'll have to pull them from the pool. I'll probably have to bribe them with ice cream to get them to come with us.
They'll come. Axel, let go of me. I can't walk.
Is Leah coming?
No, she's working.
I'm not sure what's up with her. She's writing a piece about death rituals. Roz squinted at him.
Odd?
Yes, odd.
It's that island. The hurricane. She saw so much death. I think she's having trouble shaking it from her mind.
We'll have to be very nice to her. Roz struggled across the room with Axel clinging to one leg, giggling. He'd turned her into an amusement park ride.
The ocean will tire him out. That's good.
The only thing I hate is that he eats the beach. Mark nodded.
He's definitely a sand eater.
I had to pry a huge glob of sand from his mouth last time, remember? Maybe he learned his lesson.
Learned his lesson? Go ahead. Say something stupider than that.
We'll just have to watch him like a hawk.
Yes. Like a hawk. I'll start loading up the car.
We'll take your SUV. More room.
Do we need food?
No. Bring something for Axel. We're only going for an hour. No one will starve. We can buy them ice cream from the truck in the parking lot.
Let me just drop this laundry in the machine.
She turned back to him.
This is the twin stuff.
It's so clean, you'd think they didn't wear it. She held up a white t-shirt.
But look at this. This ragged dark spot on the sleeve? I think it's a burn mark.
A burn mark?
Yes. The sleeve was definitely burned.
Weird? Weird. Mark stared at it.
Hope they're not playing with matches in their private hideaway back there.
They love it back there, Mark.
Really? You think they're happy there? Well, I walked by the guest house last night after supper and I heard them in there giggling and giggling. Think they already feel at home? They have funny jokes. One of them kept saying, smoked meat, and then they'd laugh and laugh. I don't get the joke. They were being silly. I think they're doing a great job of fitting in. I mean, losing their family and all, moving from their home, it can't be easy. Mark climbed to his feet. He glanced at his laptop monitor. No email. No one ever emailed him on Saturday. Well, we'll see how they fit in. I mean, we haven't asked much of them. They live by themselves in the back. They don't share much about school with us. They don't... Mark, there was a horrible murder right in our driveway. Maybe they even witnessed it. But they haven't seemed messed up by it. They haven't acted out or anything. Well, I think it's good that they went swimming with Ira. That's encouraging. They're the same age, so if they managed to bond with Ira, maybe... His voice drifted off. He still had major doubts about the whole thing. He went upstairs to give Leah one more chance to come along with him, but she was captured in the glow of her laptop screen. Were her eyes glassy or just reflecting the light of the monitor? We're going to the ocean. I'm going to pick up Ira and the twins. You want to come with us? She mumbled something he couldn't hear and kept typing without turning her head. He couldn't help but be annoyed. Sweetheart, don't you want to spend some time with the boys? Another mumbled reply. He forced a laugh. I'm going to have to pick you up and carry you away from that keyboard, aren't I? She waved him away. I need to get this all down, Mark. He kissed the back of her neck, changed into a swimsuit and sleeveless t-shirt, found his Tevas, and hurried outside. Roz was struggling to fasten Axel in his car seat.
Just think, only 6 more years of this. Lucky, huh?
Mark laughed.
That's what I love about you, Roz, always thinking on the bright side.
Maybe I shouldn't have put the suntan lotion on him first. He keeps sliding out of the seat. Mission accomplished with Axel, Roz climbed into the back seat beside him and they drove the few blocks to Ethan's house. The sun, still high in the afternoon sky, filtered through the trees, sending flickering light dancing over the windshield. On the side of the street, a dead squirrel had attracted the attention of several hungry blackbirds. The passing car didn't even make them flutter a wing or interrupt their feast. Mark pulled the car to the bottom of the driveway. The 3 garage doors were open. No cars in view. Wasn't anyone home to watch the boys in the pool? He left the air conditioner running for Roz and Axel and climbed out of the car. It was a hot day, more like summer than May. A great beach day. Sunlight bounced off the front of the white frame house. He took a few steps up the smooth paved driveway. A chipmunk darted out of the garage into the yard. A few doors down, he heard the low drone of a power mower. Across the street, 2 little girls rode pink and yellow tricycles up and down a driveway. Nearly to the front of the house, Mark stopped to listen. The silence disturbed him. No splashing. No boys' voices. Usually they were decimating each other with water blasters, cannonballing into the pool and jumping out, shouting and wrestling and splashing. Today, silence. They never went indoors when they could be in the pool. A sudden feeling of dread made the back of his neck tingle. Too quiet. Too quiet. His legs felt heavy as lead as he started to jog toward the back. Is something wrong back there? What's going on? He was breathing hard by the time he reached the white picket fence. Still silent back there. Hey, where is everybody? He pulled the gate. When it didn't budge, he pushed it. He stumbled onto the deck and saw them immediately.